Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Hello and welcome to this breaking news episode of What Most People Think, and there is a hell of a lot of news. Around at the end of this week, we've got Donald Trump, potentially a peacemaker in the Middle East. We've got Kemi Badenoch, a speechmaker, no less, and Keir Starmer, well, spy trial collapse, that doesn't really work as well. But yeah, there's plenty to talk about, and I am speaking to you live from the Travelodge in Dundee, and anybody that follows me on social media would have seen that I did a post showing a photo of two weird, but when I checked in, there's the double bed, right? Sometimes they just give you a weirdly big room, and there's a double bed, but there was also two single beds by the window that was slightly staggered at weird angles. And I don't know why, because the building's quite an old sort of weird building. I just got it in my mind that this used to be a Victorian hospital for sick children. And that, you know, they'd put them by the beds. Let them have daylight. Might be their last. Anyway, that's a bit bleak. But I'm fully on the road, man. I did Glasgow on Wednesday. That was lovely. What an audience there. I did Dundee last night. And it was good, man. It was good. As I said, in the end, the numbers did get up to a respectable number. But same with Aberdeen. It struggled for a while. And I only found out last night, right? And this isn't the entire reason. But Dara O'Brien was in Dundee last night. It's not the biggest city in the world. And I don't think that every single person that would see Dara O'Brien would come and see me. Also, there was a Scotland match on. I mean, it would have been good at any point since these tickets were on sale in March if anybody had reassured me by telling me that. And then in Aberdeen tonight, on Friday, John Bishop and Dara O'Brien are in town. So now, contextually, I'm happy with the numbers, but if you are about in Aberdeen, do come along tonight. I'm in full touring mode. I've got Leeds this Sunday. I've got Monday, the rearranged date in Chipping Norton, and Swindon sold out after that on the Wednesday. Thursday, Maidenhead is sold out. Then I've got Aldershot next Saturday, and then I've got Brighton on the Sunday. Brighton is very nearly sold out, so get tickets for Aldershot and Brighton while you can. Now, it's fair to say after the main episode this week with Rialina, I anticipated feedback, and I got it. Boy, did I get it from all of you on all sides. What was really interesting is that, you know, on this podcast, there are a lot of podcasts where it's the same two people every week having a very similar discussion. This is a bit of a kind of mystery box, this one. Sometimes you'll have things that will surprise you, you'll agree with, you'll disagree with. You know, there was a mixed reaction. Some people loved it. Some people thought either of us made good points about things. Some people thought I completely rolled over. But I tell you what, it wasn't boring, was it? It wasn't boring, but we will have early. I've booked Francis Foster for next week, so we'll look forward to that one. Obviously, if you're a patron, I will see your feedback guaranteed. And I'm just looking, there's no new patrons this week. So let me say again, I am fronting all the production costs for this. So doing it twice a week, as you can imagine, there are production costs. So you could help me, but also you get the podcast early, ad-free, and with bonus content and loads of other extra benefits. So if you fancy a bit of that, go to Patreon. If you could do it through the website, that helps me because, not to put a finer point, the main platform that offers the app have, they put in a fairly aggressive take in. Let's put it that way. So that would be that would really help me. And I want to do the thank you and the fuck you this week. The thank you is something I never expected, is that again, if you follow me on social media, you'd already know this, but I have been deepfaked by who, Jeff? Well, the Russian state. Let me just play it to you and then we'll pick it up after.
I'm Jeff Norcott, a comedian, writer and performer, and I'm at the Imperial War Museum today to look at the Bravatnik. The museum also features many Armenian artists whose art has become much darker in recent years. Artists have a keen sense of reality. Their work suggests that they foresee the destruction of Armenia. Armenia has already embarked on a path of destruction.
Okay, so yeah, there's been There's a bit to unpack there. So what it is a video that starts off in something I actually did about the Imperial War Museum. And then it goes straight into a kind of, I don't know, a cultural disinformation video, which is something to do with what's going on in Armenia, which I will get out on the front foot. I know fuck all about Armenia, okay? I just don't. Maybe I should, but I don't. But what's really weird about this video is how little effort has gone into this deepfake. It's because it starts off with my voice, and then it cuts away, and then it still sounds like me for about a millisecond, and then it becomes very posh and becomes like, it almost ends up sounding like Kenneth Wolstenholme. Yeah. I'm Jeff Norcott, and I'm at the Imperial War Museum, and here I am talking about Armenia, and some of the crowd are on the pitch. They think it's all... It's just a really bizarre thing. So I don't know if the Kremlin are still smarting from some of my criticisms. You remember a few weeks ago? I think it was with Francis Foster, where maybe we insinuated that Vladimir Putin had repressed desires for men. And maybe they've done this as a way of revenge. So God knows what else is going to happen. Do let me know if halfway through this podcast... I just start talking about Armenia, all right? Because that will mean that the Kremlin have got their grubby mitts all over this. So yeah, if you just of all the things you expect in life to be deep faked by Russia, anyway, the fuck you is to Paddington. So the owners of Paddington are bringing a lawsuit against the production company Avalon because they've been doing so spitting image. And I think this is a smart move for them. They've gone online and they're doing sort of 10-minute type things on YouTube. They're doing shorter hits. It did a few series on BritBox. I mean, BritBox didn't do well itself. It was always going to be, you know, a push for it to get a big audience there. And they've had a few viral hits. Gareth Roberts, by the way, who does great writing, he's done a brilliant article on this in The Spectator. So this is really the thing to read for it. But... what's odd about it, so the sketch is that Paddington is kind of a coke-addled, like, bear. He's got, like, eyes out on stalks and stuff, and he's doing a podcast with Prince Harry or presenting a show with Prince Harry. But the owners of Paddington's image are, I think they've issued, like, a cease and desist, or but they're certainly making legal noises against Avalon. And I think, like, fuck it, it's so dumb to do this. Because first up, is anyone really going to confuse... these two images of Paddington, right? Is any kid... First up, a kid shouldn't be seeing this because of the age rate. It shouldn't be, you know, it shouldn't have a YouTube or a TikTok account. Is anyone going to think, oh my God, any kid going to think, oh my God, what's happened with Paddington? I mean, I know he's a celebrity and Jesus, you know, what else is under that hat? I mean, that is a good question. What is under that hat? I mean, it'd be a great way to smuggle drugs, wouldn't it? Being Paddington. Who's going to question Paddington? Marmalade sandwiches. Maybe that is the international drug trafficking word, you know, for an ounce of coke is we're gonna have 7 marmalade sandwiches in a suitcase that'll be left off the docks. And the thing about Paddington as well is, listen, mate, you can't suddenly be you're a public figure, mate. The moment you sat down, right, and yes, I did cry when I saw the image of you with the Queen, but the moment you sat down and did that, you're a public figure, okay? You're establishment, bro. Don't start sitting there going, oh, I'm a commercial thing. You are part of the British establishment, and therefore, you are ripe for satire and piss-taking. And frankly, Paddington, I've always accepted you as a citizen of this country, but if you're saying you can't accept piss-taking, then, well, I'll have to rethink that. There you go. Rant against Paddington. I mean, now you're probably thinking that was a bit bizarre, Jeff. Is that another Russian deepfake? It wasn't. Anyway, let's talk about Donald Trump and the ceasefire / peace plan in the Middle East. So it was a couple of days ago, people saw that video of Donald Trump. He was giving an address. There was some sort of conference about crime. And then Marco Rubio just leans in and passes him a note. And I mean, the amazing thing with Trump, right, compared to previous administrations is they'd have just gone, excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, and not said anything. Donald Trump, he'll just say what you see. I just got a Marco there. He said exactly what was going on. He said, it looks like we're close to a deal in the Middle East. In fact, what the note was specifically about was we need you to sign off on a post for Truth Social. And some of that is about Trump claiming the credit, you know, which he's going to do. I don't have a problem with that if it leads to something good, right? Now, classic Donald, instead of just saying, well, you know, things are looking good and we're hopeful, 3,000-year peace in the Middle East. It's like, okay. I mean, you know, sometimes maybe it's a benefit from not having read history books, but... Yeah, whatever, Donald. We all want that to be true, right? And as I'm recording this on Friday, it was signed off by the Israeli government. There were a few dissenting voices, but essentially, you know, there's an exchange of hostages and there's an exchange of, you know, Palestinian prisoners the other way, and Israel withdrawing to a certain point. And, you know, it's a start. I mean, at the very least, if, even if you want to be cynical about this, just there not being that not happening for a while. And, you know, if the hostages get home, God knows what it would have felt like 2 years, you know, to have been there for their families and for the families that are waiting to bury their loved ones, you know, it must have been horrific. And also, you know, for the people, just normal, you know, people in Gaza to not have that going on. You know, everyone wants this, right? And you got to think, like, how is this possible now? And some people are saying, you know, a lot of it is Biden's deal. Fine, but Biden didn't get it over the line. Maybe the passage of time has helped. But I do think that the old madman theory does help. If you're sitting across the table for Donald Trump, the question of what would this bloke do has got to be weighing heavy in your mind, right? It's got to be, he could literally go from moving the US embassy to Jerusalem to cutting Israel off, right? It seems unlikely he'd do that, but it certainly seems that there was some brinkmanship. And after Israel took out the Hamas guy in Qatar, it does seem that Donald Trump made Netanyahu apologise, right? Which is, you know, it's quite an achievement. I mean, and it's quite emasculating. Say, you said, say sorry. You got to say sorry, baby. And I suppose what Biden didn't have was that all-important unpredictability. He did have unpredictability, and that was mainly, will he stay awake? Will he remember which era of geopolitical history we're living through? But not that, you know, and the same thing that maybe Putin is slightly wary of, and maybe it might be the same thing that will get an outcome in Ukraine. So you just don't know quite what he's going to do.
What most people think.
And listen, by the time you're listening to this, something might have happened, something might be unraveling. A lot of the things that have to happen for this are controversial, right? And will be controversial to people on both sides. And there's also a reckoning over, you know, what has happened in Gaza. But, you know, what is interesting, I think, if you're just looking at it from a pundit's point of view, is listening to people have to give him credit. You know, I've been saying in my tour show, the biggest issue that people have with Donald Trump is his biggest fans and his biggest critics share the same problem, is they're not willing to admit that he is a mixed bag. And without telling you the joke, but essentially, he's basically, on the one side, a disruptor that can get different outcomes, and on the other side, a guy that just chats pure shit, right? You have to acknowledge that is what he is. And I was listening to news agents, you know, because I like to keep in touch with what people think. That's what I like about this podcast, right? I want to know what people are thinking. And in fairness to, it's John, it's Emily, it's Lewis. I might start doing that in this podcast. It's Jeff. John Sopel was like, you know, he was a correspondent at the White House. He was like, fair's fair, you know, Trump, he's got something here. Lewis Goodall, you know, fair enough to him. I always like it when pundits are willing to say, to give credit to people who are their natural enemies, because then I go, right, that gives me faith that maybe, you know, you are doing your best to be objective here. I think it's fair to say that Emily Maitlis was slightly more cautious in her welcome and in this news, but I just, you've got a welcome. A conflict like this has been going on two years. There's got to be no ifs or fucking buts about it, right? Even if it's just for 24 hours, right? You know, you can get into the, just as when you first hear the news, just say, great, awesome, a breakthrough. I hope this leads to better things. Because if your first instinct is to go, great, but Trump could, no, okay, just, it's like, it's almost like the Charlie Kirk thing, isn't it? On the day of the Charlie Kirk murder, all you got to say is, fuck me, that's horrific, right? And on the day that Donald Trump, through whatever fucking nefarious, madman, batshit means, seems to have helped achieve a breakthrough in the Middle East, all you got to say is, oh, that's good news.
What?
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Okay, so rumbling along in the background is this story. Has anyone called it Spygate yet? Has it got a name? I mean, so there's these two guys, these two British nationals. By the way, if you're ever referred to as a British national, something's gone wrong, isn't it? You're either a hostage or you've been arrested for drug trafficking or you're spying. Two British nationals were seized. So these two guys were arrested, I think, in 2023 on suspicion of spying. And their names are Christopher Cash and Christopher Berry. So first up, the two Chrises. I mean, just Cash and Berry, it does sound like ITV might be soft launching like a crime drama. Cash and Berry, one of those 90s ones. People still rolling across like, you know, the bonnet of a Sierra. First up, can we just say, right, if they were spying for another country against this country, I fucking hate, there's something about treason, you know what I mean? Or we're acting against your own country that just has the, you know, I put them in the tower. Can we still do that if they're guilty, right? But they were charged last April, right? And the case was building against them. And then recently it collapsed and that comes into the public domain and people are asking questions why. And one of the director of public prosecutions, he goes public to say is that despite repeated requests, the government won't provide the necessary info, right? Over many months. I don't know how you knock that back. I mean, we all procrastinate. I don't know how in the case of a spying in Whitehall against the government, you just kind of go, oh, I'm so sorry. Look, this is now top of my to-do list. Look, photo of my to-do list, spy stuff, top. It feels quite important. So fair play to anyone that was able to kick that into the long grass. The issue, it seems, is that the government weren't willing to provide witness statements that attested to the idea that was that China was an enemy of the state, right? And that, I mean, I'd say if people were spying, you know, I mean, look, I'm guessing that we do this shit as well, right? I guess America, you know, they'll sort of do it. The problem is when you get caught. So it's difficult for Starmer because they're trying to think of, right, how do we get any economic growth at all? One of them might be to be nice to China, to say that they are an enemy. Is going to be an issue. So Starmer's fudge, it's very legalese, his fudge, is that at the time the arrest happened or the charges were brought, that they weren't technically an enemy. So Starmer says, so all the focus needs to be on the policy of the Tory government in place then. Of course, Keir, everything has to be the Tories. 14 years! And then the Chinese, of course, they've come out and said that, you know, they're not just going to come out and go, yep, fair enough. Oh, the two Chrises. Yeah, we thought that was weird that was their name as well. They said, we urge certain individuals in the UK to stop this kind of self-staged anti-China political farce. I always find it hilarious with both Russia and China. When they deny stuff, they just sound so guilty. I don't think they're very good at getting the language right. It's too performative. This is absolutely absurd. There's absolutely no way we'd have got that bloke called Chris to spy. Ooh! So, you know, there is evidence that China's been very aggressively penetrating the UK state. There was a report in 2023 that said China has penetrated every sector of the UK economy. Another former director of public prosecution, 2023, the head of MI5, Ken McCallum, said that there had been a sustained campaign of Chinese espionage on a pretty epic scale, right? Former DPP has said that you simply cannot have a serious national security case collapsing without some proper explanation given to the public, right? So, you know, there's a lot of serious heavyweight people. I mean, with the DPP, the current DPP, writes to MPs to explain to them what's happened, you think that this is quite a big deal. And look, I am totally sympathetic to the idea that this is tricky at best, you know, at least, I don't know. It's tricky. It's fucking tricky for the government because China, you know, they're trying to walk a line here. Maybe relationships have improved, but this is like, sort of like, you know, if a couple split up because one person cheated and they split up because of that cheating and then they get back together and it turns out there was another minor indiscretion at that time. Like, what'd you do? You kind of, oh, things are going well now. Do we brush it under the... I mean, that's what Keir Starmer's trying to do. And it's just slightly pathetic that he's trying to just bury it. This actually comes down to a technical matter. Oh, yeah, Keir, once this goes big with the public, I reckon the public can go, look, the really important thing here is the legal definition at the time. No, what they will feel like is that you're not being transparent. And that's fine. Look, I get it. You know, you're being in the government is hard. But it does come back to, I suppose, a recurrent theme of this Labour government is that in opposition, they acted like, you know, being in government was easy and that sometimes you wouldn't have to take controversial or difficult decisions. Well, you know, life is coming at you fast, and watch this space, because PMQs is going to resume soon. And no doubt, Kemi, you know, she mentioned it in her speech, this issue of how this case collapsed is going to come back. So in a minute, we're going to move on to talk about Kemi and her speech, which was quite good. All right, so Kemi Badenoch did a Tory party conference speech on Thursday, and it was generally considered a success. You know, all the political podcasts that I was listening to, even people that were natural sort of enemies of the Tories, sort of said, yeah, it was good. Maybe she's sort of saved herself for now. She managed to make the front pages of most newspapers in a positive way. Stamp duty was on the front pages. They're going to cut stamp duty. That was the big takeaway. There was quite a lot of stuff in there, quite big stuff in a way. But that was always going to be, you know, what they called a retail political offer. And I was saying, you know, I think what made the stamp duty thing the big story in a way was just the idea of a tax cut, any tax cut at all, just the idea of the state taking a little bit less of something. It was kind of like a throwback to a more liberated age, wasn't it? It's a little bit like, do you know when you go to a country, just some random country, and you go in a pub and everyone's smoking? And I don't smoke myself and I hate smoking, but there is something quite rock and roll about the fact that people still smoke in a public space. You're like, fucking hell, that's what it was like. And I know a lot of taxes are quite spurious in a way. You know, VAT itself is just literally, it's a, we'll have some of that tax, right? But stamp duty, because it is tied up in a positive life event, it's always struck me as completely cynical that the government kind of weigh in. You know, and I get that people buy commercial properties and whatever, but for most people, they're buying places to live in. And the idea that the government come in, it is a little bit mafioso, isn't it? It's just like, hey, me and Jimmy and the guys, we heard you had some good news. We feel like we should get our beaks wet. Why the fuck do you get any of this money? Oh, you bought a house. It's like, what else are you going to tax? Wedding tax? Baby tax? It's just always struck me as weird. So it was interesting to me that, you know, on my lads WhatsApp group, we haven't really discussed the Tories much for a while. And, you know, certainly nothing vaguely positive about Kemi. But we were talking about it, you know, and there was, not everyone on the group was hostile to it. So, you know, I think that, fair play in a way to Riolina. Riolina said that, you know, what Kemi should do at her speech is just promise stuff that she doesn't have to deliver, because why not? Everyone else is doing it. Well, Kemi did, and it was a success. In the speech itself, she had moments of humour, smiling Kemi. She made some jokes. She also referred to Shabana Mahmood and then just went, right. She sort of defaulted to a kind of West African roots in terms of the way she was speaking. And it was really interesting to see on TikTok where people are so hostile to her. They were going, ha, look, that's how she really speaks. She's only pretending to speak posh normally. And that no, she was code switching for effect, you fucking idiots. And it worked. Like, there's a laugh straight afterwards. I mean, Jesus Christ, if a bunch of predominantly white people in the room can get that joke, I don't understand how young, trendy TikTok couldn't. But anyway, she had some good phrases in it. She had some good phrases. Her best moments really were attacking Labour, you know. And you do wonder with that. The problem is that Reform and other parties are a beneficiary. You know, maybe she's doing other parties' jobs for them a little bit, talking to you, Lib Dems and the Greens. But she said that Labour had a plan to win, but no plan for power. She also talks about the police chasing tweets instead of thieves. That could be another crime drama. Maybe it could be Cash and Berry. Cash and Berry on the case for violent tweets. But she didn't mention Farage. And I think that would have pissed him off. because Nigel, he likes to be in the conversation. Nigel, he would have just been sat in there. I bet, you know, it'd be one of those ones where he just sat down with his boys going, oh, here we go. Get me speech. Well, this could be shit. Another 2 points in the past, lads. She's probably going to talk about me. You know, Keir could stop talking about me. And then as it went, he's like, she hasn't mentioned me. And then he goes for a piss, comes like, did she, I bet she mentioned. No, she didn't, Nigel. I think that's smart because one of, you know, Reform are an oxygen-based party, right? More oxygen you give them, more they breathe, the bigger they get. They're like a big plant in the Jurassic era. Weird analogy. But what she did mention was, by the way, I think that, like, they've got to stop trying to take on Reform on their... Because Reform, when Reform do the anti-woke stuff and the mic, it just feels more authentic with them. The Tories have got to be the sensible economy guys. And there is some polling, actually, that suggests that they had lost the lead to Labour in terms of who people trust most with the economy, but it looks like they might be getting it back. And that's not to say that I think people are thinking the Tories would do a great job. It's mainly that people are thinking, well, they couldn't do worse than this lot.
What most people think.
And, you know, another issue that she addressed, and overall, I think this was a good speech. I thought Starmer's was decent in terms of what it achieved in the hall. I think this is a good speech, full stop. And I don't think it changes the fact that come May, you know, she might be absolutely screwed. But this was, under pressure, about as good as it could have been. And she, you know, she was doing something which they needed to do, which is get their front bench more visible. Because there's a period with the Tories where at least they had visibility. You kind of knew who people were, your Cleverleys, your Hunts, you know, your Bravermans. But she kept on referring to her shadow cabinet, pretty Alex, Helen. At times it felt like a meet and greet for a new department. Maybe they should have had like big old name tags in big capital letters. And she referred to, tried to act like Robert Jenrick didn't want her job. And she referred to him. She gave him credit for chasing down fare dodgers. I don't know if that was like, maybe was that a smart little diss in there? Because as much as it was an effective piece of social media, it did seem slightly minimising. Hey, you, Robert, with your little project, doing your socials? Hey, everybody should look at Robert's TikTok. He does some really good TikToks down there. I don't know why, it just seemed oddly belittling. And his speech, he did that weird stunt with the judges, which kind of didn't play out exactly great for him. Her speech did seem to kind of cut through better, but, you know, it does appear a lot of Tory members would like a bit of Jenrick, having said that now. But I think overall, it was just a good question to ask. You know, there was some stuff that, listen, I believe if they got in power, you know, banning doctors from striking, easier said than done. You know, some of the financial issues that would be created by, you know, removing certain, you know, VAT on private schools. These are all things that I support, by the way, but like you can't ignore the fact that there might be ramification in terms of government receipts. But I just think with the stamp duty thing, it just introduced the idea of tax cuts back into the British lexicon. You know, hey, this is a thing that you can do and there will be some people that might benefit from it and it might, you know, sort of release the gummed up housing market. Because I do think with certain taxes, we've sort of stopped asking. We just talk about the level that they're taxed at. We stopped asking whether or not there's a fucking need for them or even like a philosophical reason that they should exist in the first place. So for that reason alone, it was just refreshing to hear somebody do that, even if it was massively hypothetical. Okay, that is the breaking news episode. Thank you very much for listening. I could ask you as well. I now know the numbers of you that listen, and some of you dip in and out, and what you need to do is listen to all of them, yeah? That's my new business plan. Listen to all of them. But the way, some of it is just because that's how you see it in your podcast app. So you just got to follow it. Make sure you're following the podcast as well, not just Googling it every few weeks. And also the reviews that you leave are so helpful. I've seen that people can leave episode ones on Spotify as well, but giving me a 5-star rating on there does me a right favour. There's a message here. iTunes, if you leave a 5-star on iTunes, I will read it out. This one says, love what most people think, but the best bit is not knowing the ads I'll get. Somebody's had a random ad for an American auto shop. I have American listeners, all right? This is just being diverse, but thank you very much for the 5-star. This is from David McNally. That sounds like a Northern Irish name. Might not be. Dear, I've been listening to Jeff for a couple of years now, and I always find that his views and opinions are very much in line with myself. He is open to discussion on both sides of politics and will listen and respect other people's views. I would highly recommend a listen for Keir Starmer alone. Oh my God, that accent went to a bad place. He says, look forward to seeing you in November. This is from Ian F. up north. Excellent podcast. Been listening to it for a decent amount of time. Intelligent but accessible. Funny but serious when needed. Does a great job of presenting multiple opinions. Jeff remains vaguely centre-right. What's it says here? He said, Ian also says, I got a good weakness for good-looking South Londoners, so maybe he really needs to release a calendar too. I mean, I had that accent and that content just didn't match up, did it? This is from Gemma. Gemma says, I bet Gemma's got a right girl's voice, Gemma. Gemma says, loves Jeff's podcast, comedy and focus on men's mental health. It is so refreshing to get his regular balanced and funny take on what's going on in politics in the world from a normal centre-right perspective. Thanks for last, Jeff. Couldn't get to see you in St. Evan Arch the other week, but we'll try to get to another show. I mean, how annoyed is Gemma going to be if she's sitting there? She's like, I'm a fucking professor, man. How dare you? But listen, thank you for the reviews. Thank you for listening. And as I say, we'll be back. The main show will be back on Tuesday next week with Francis Foster. Have a great weekend.